Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place, right here, where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And our guest today is Christine McKay. Much. My guest is here. She's been waiting for me. I had to get my car fixed, Brains. You ever had to get your car fixed? Have you ever had to buy a car, Brains? That's a negotiation. That's one of many types of negotiation. And that's what we're going to feature today. Ooh, I get all this braid out my face. That's what we're going to feature today, the art of the deal. Now, you want to know somebody to know the real deal? My guest today, okay? She is no joke. Christine McKay from L.A. She has brokered deals. I'm talking about gazillions of dollars. Okay, maybe not a gazillion, but almost a gazillion dollars. She's a global negotiation strategist, CEO of Venn Negotiations. She's an author and an international speaker. Now, Brains, you know, I told you, you don't pay to get up in here, but you better pay attention. And I suggest you get a pen and paper because we're going to go at it, okay? Everything you need to know about brokering a deal so that everybody wins. Right, Christine?
Absolutely. How are you? It's so good to see you.
I know. I'm at the top of my game over here. And I'm about to really just soar now. I've been watching you and following you, and you are the business. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Okay, so tell my brains all about you.
So I was born and raised in a very tiny town of 550 people in north central Montana, not far from the Canadian border, in a farming and ranching community. So I'm a country girl at heart. But now I live in downtown Los Angeles, so a completely different world. I'm the mom of three grown children, and my husband and I have been married for 29 years this year.
Wow!
He's a rock star for me, and I've been doing negotiations for almost 30 years, and started out doing international mergers and acquisitions in Southeast Asia, and then worked in Eastern and Western Europe. And then I came to the US and was doing more work here. And I've worked in Canada and in Mexico and Central and South America. So I've covered a lot of the globe, but I've worked with a lot of big companies.
Tell them, girl.
I've worked with almost half the Fortune 500, and my largest deal is $2.4 billion with a B. But what I found was that big companies have an advantage when they negotiate, because everyone in a large organization specializes in something. So they have a deep level of knowledge in whatever area it is that they specialize in. And so they kind of drive a process. But for smaller companies, that process is kind of broken for them. And what ends up happening is big companies try to push off a lot of risk to smaller organizations, and they required them to take big hits on their revenue. And so there's a huge mismatch. And so what I realized is that a lot of people don't have access to training and don't have access. They don't have nobody's talking to smaller companies and to entrepreneurs.
Okay, give
saying,
a dollar,
how to negotiate.
Equate your ranking when you talk about companies. Because again, you've dealt with billion-dollar companies. You're not talking about the mom and pop, you know? So what range are we talking about so people can, you know, see where they fall in line?
Well, my clients at Venn Negotiation range in size from companies of $1 million to $150 million. Okay. So there's a broad range. And we do We have training programs for individuals and entrepreneurs, solopreneurs who come through our training programs. And we have corporate training where we go into to mid-sized organizations and teach negotiation. And then we do consulting services where we actually act as the lead negotiator on behalf of many of our clients who are dealing with, maybe they're trying to sell their business. Maybe they're trying to negotiate and do a deal with, you know, I don't know, SoCal Gas or Cedar Sinai or Verizon. And
let's look at some practical applications here. Structuring and brokering a deal 101.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is for everybody. And Brains, I need for you to understand this top shelf information. You can apply this information to any aspect of your life. If you are negotiating with your divorce, with your bank account, with your potential employer, because that's a negotiation, the interview process, you're buying a car, you know, you're trying to push up on somebody. Everything is the art of negotiation. Some winners, some losers. But finding that middle ground where everyone can concede. And I'm speaking to you, female brains. Yes, I'm calling you out. Because women tiptoe around this and sugarcoat it. And me and Christine are not one of them. Okay? We come in like a bulldozer. You need to ask for the business and close on the deal. All this back and forth got to be co-signed by this person. I got to think about it. I got to pray on it. I got to do Reiki over it. Whatever. You need to close on the deal. Okay? I'm serious. Am I right or wrong, Christine?
You're right. I mean, actually, Boston College released a study this last summer that actually showed they looked at boys and girls ages. I think it was from 3 to 10 to see how they negotiated with men and women. And boys negotiated equally with men and women throughout that entire period. Girls negotiated equally with women, but starting at the age of 8, girls stop negotiating with men. And so that continues in so many parts of our lives as we get older, that we're afraid to ask for what we want. And it's true for men too. And so, which is part of why I wrote my book, Why Not Ask? A Conversation About Getting More, because why not ask? We, you know, there are three parts to every negotiation. Every negotiation, whether using the examples you used, whether it's a divorce, whether it's a job situation, whether you're buying a car, whether it's you're selling your business, there are three parts to every negotiation.
What are they?
Components. You are the constant factor in every negotiation that you do. And if you don't understand how you are as a negotiator and you don't understand or take time to evaluate how people perceive you at the negotiation table, you are missing out on a huge amount of value. The second thing is your counterpart. Many of us go into a negotiation thinking about us. We're the most important person at the table. That's actually inaccurate, because if we don't spend time thinking about our counterpart and what makes a deal successful for them, we're losing opportunities to find more value. And then the third part is, what's the situation that you're negotiating? What specifically are you trying to negotiate for, and what's the environment in which you're negotiating? I have somebody here in LA who 2 weeks before the pandemic, and I'm sorry, I'm coming off of a cold, but
that's all right.
So I apologize. The 2 weeks before Los Angeles closed down, he signed a 10-year lease on new restaurant space. Mm. 2 weeks before the pandemic closed down. As an individual, he was not paying attention to the situation that in which he was negotiating, the environment in which he was negotiating. So there's you, your counterpart, and the situation.
Right.
And deals happen at the intersection of all three of those things.
Okay. So now we're here at the crossroads. Everybody wants to win. Like you said, you have to consider the other person. And when you go into a negotiation, what are you willing to concede on? Say, for example, it's your job. Okay, you may not get that extra $10,000, but you might get an extra week of vacation. You might get some stock options. You might get a better retirement packet or 401k or whatever. But it is the art of negotiation. Explain to them and define the word negotiation, please.
So for me, negotiation is simply a conversation. It's a conversation between two or more people about what is going to be what they want and what they need. And negotiation is the process of ironing out and figuring out, does what person one wants align with what person two wants? And how do you create value for each other? And I talk about negotiation, and attorneys laugh at me when I say this, but, and so do a lot of business people. But it's because people haven't heard it before. Negotiation is a hopeful act. We use data and information from the past to negotiate a deal in the present based on a hope that together, that working together creates a better future for both of us.
Wow.
And so it's a hopeful act. And for, you know, I personally am reluctant to use the term win in negotiation, because it's when we think about winning, we also, you know, when I speak from stage, I also say, you know, I ask people, if somebody says left, you say,
right.
Right. If somebody says yes, you say
no.
If somebody says black, you say
white.
Right. If somebody says win, you say
lose.
Exactly. But research shows that most negotiation has more value available to us than we realize, because we go into it thinking that if we're going to win, in order for me to win, you have to lose. But what if there was more available to us? What if we saw a piece of, you know, if this circle, it represents 100, right? And we're negotiating for it. And you know, if all we see is that 100, if you take 10, then there's only 90 left for me. And if you take 50 or 60, there's only 50 or 40 left for me. But most research shows that that 100 is actually 142. There's 42% more value available to most of us in our negotiations than we realize it, because all we're doing is looking at it just based on how we perceive it.
So in other words, the emotion that's attached to it, the initial, you know, charge of victory, or I've won, or I've conquered, but we're really not taking into consideration long-term
exactly.
effects and how this can expand, okay, by negotiating and collaboration.
Exactly, because negotiation is a conversation about a relationship, and you cannot win a relationship, but you can get more value out of it. So the beauty of effective negotiation is that you're creating more value for yourself, but also for your counterpart. Hmm. And it's that conversation of understanding how you define value relative to how I define value.
Exactly. Because
we define value in different ways.
I know, because people come to me and they'll say, oh, well, you know, let's collaborate, and it's a win-win. You don't determine my win.
Oh, God, no, absolutely.
No. I'm the one that determines, and it's got to be value. You know, everything is not dollars and cents either, brain. Oh, brains, understand. You know, I have friends, big money friends. They have yachts. I don't need one. I just need access. You know, I have people that get me concert tickets. Just access is what you need. You don't necessarily need the dollar amount. Sometimes a negotiation goes as low as getting your kids to eat their peas. But it is a conversation about a relationship, you know, and it doesn't have to be based on this word trust, because trust can hold you hostage. Oh, okay, I trust you if you do XYZ. It's contingent on, and if you don't do that, you know, then I don't trust you anymore, you know, or there's always some sort of caveat. So when you're working with a shrewd negotiator, I mean, somebody that's just really kind of got their feet in the sand and saying, I'm not going to do this. What are some of the signals and some of the signs you should tell people to just back off? You know, just go ahead. Maybe that's not the opportunity for you.
Well, the first thing is to actually get clear on what it is that the other person, you know, a really shrewd negotiator is curious. So a really good negotiator is always curious about themselves, their counterpart, and the deal, the situation that they're negotiating. Somebody who's unmovable is not curious. So they're just being, you know, obnoxious and jerky.
Yeah, they're just laying there like lunch meat, right.
That exists. Those people exist. We call them champions. They're champions for themselves. All they care about is winning. They see negotiation as a battle, and they go into it fully armed and fully armored. And their whole objective is to annihilate you. And the way you deal with that is using effective questions. So the thing is that you have to, so the first piece is to determine whether somebody's truly being immovable or not. And you do that by asking effective questions. And so a lot of times, so my hair right now is really tame. This is like the most normal my hair has looked.
I know, when I met you, it was like purple, right?
23 years, yeah. So the question, so people usually, when my hair, so like the magenta in this Venn negotiation thing is usually a color I have in my hair. So what people will say to me is, Christine, why do you color your hair those weird colors? Or why is your hair pink? And what's the first thing that I have to do when somebody says, why is your hair pink?
You have to justify it. Absolutely.
I have to justify it. I have to defend it. I have to have a rationale. I have to have a reason. And what that person is saying, it's there's a judgment associated with the question why. And so one of the things that we often do in negotiation is ask people why. Why can't you do that? Which implies is if I ask you why can't you do that, then the automatic thing is you're going to get defensive because you have to defend whatever it is you can or can't do, right? And so, you know, asking effective questions starts with asking what questions. What might we be able to do? What might you be able to do?
Right.
What might you be able to do now? Or what might you be able to do in, you know, in this period of time? Get specific, right? Mm-hmm. Too often we spend time focused on generalities and you know, people get nervous. There's, you know, opposite of a champion, we call a benefactor, somebody who's like hates negotiation. They see it as confrontation and they hate the word no. And I'm like, no is a very freeing word.
Oh, no, honey, no, let me tell you.
Yeah, no gives me a lot of freedom. It gives me the freedom to do the things that I want to be doing, that I'd prefer to be doing.
Right. And so, you know what? And to be timely and respectful of other people's space. You know, no is okay. And you know what? The word no is only the word on spelled backwards.
Well, the thing is that I always say that except in sex where no means no, no is an invitation to ask another question in a different way, right? Because we're trying to discover, is this person really immovable? Or what really are they saying no to? Are they saying no to an entire idea? That's not usually common. Usually somebody is saying no to a specific part of an idea. And the job of an effective negotiator is to figure out what specifically are they saying no to? Is there a yes somewhere in there that I can latch onto and I can move forward with?
And so what you want to be is a solution seeker brains, not a problem describer.
Absolutely. I love that. Yes.
We want you to be progressive. Ask the questions. And you can tell if you're being annoying. And sometimes when you don't get what you want, it's really a blessing in disguise. I tell you a story. I love to tell y'all my story. I had this girl that I was working with, and I was a little envious of her because she got promoted over me. But when she got that promotion, baby, they worked her like a Hebrew slave, okay? And I was so glad it wasn't me. So being envious of someone else is a distraction because you don't know, you know, what they're going through or what is on the table. Don't leave money on the table if you can avoid it. Sometimes you can't get the dollar amount that you want for a particular thing. Again, do you have flexibility? And especially in this climate, women, be sure that you make the ask and close on the deal. Follow up. Don't be afraid. Be a risk taker. And gentlemen, you know, You're not always so shrewd. Sometimes you make bad decisions too. Have some women at the table working with you because we come with a different set of emotions. And negotiation is a lot of emotion too. Wouldn't you agree, Christine?
Negotiation, contrary to what people think, people often say, you know, oh, this is just business. And I say, baloney. The thing is that as soon as we want something from somebody, we are already emotionally engaged. And, you know, people will say, you got to control or manage your emotions. And I say, baloney to that too. Emotions just are, we just feel them and we can't control them, but we can control how we react to them.
Right.
Right. And so the decision to do a deal is an emotional decision. The decision to enter into a deal or to talk to somebody about doing something is an emotional decision. And the decision to actually close a deal is an emotional decision. There's emotion throughout the whole process. And so I always encourage people to name and label the emotion. What emotion is driving the conversation? How are you feeling about it? I just recently had, I was in the middle of a negotiation a few months ago, and I was on Zoom with a guy, and he made a sexually oriented comment to me, followed immediately by I don't know why anyone would hire you, a woman, to negotiate. And so I felt something, right? I definitely felt, you know, I could tell I was getting mad. Yeah. As like, all right, I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling frustrated, feeling hurt, feeling a whole bunch of things. Now, what am I going to do with those feelings? Right. I could explode. I could say something, you know, nasty in return.
I would have done business with him and taxed his ass and charged him double. That's how I roll. Well, and dare him to say
it. It wasn't quite that simple. But what I did instead is I asked him permission to ask him a question. I said, can I ask you a question? He said, sure. And I said, what reaction were you hoping to achieve by making those statements? Right. That was a way of taking power away. Of retaining my own power. And so when we're negotiating, there are ways of using questions become so important in how you, it's the primary way that we hold on to our power, that we hold on to our strength, that we get curious about the other person to understand what they need to be successful. And we stay curious about ourselves too. Because most people are not aware enough, self-aware enough to go, oh, wait, I'm feeling something, and to notice that feeling. Most of us will react. And when we're in a negotiation, that's the worst thing.
We don't give it time to process.
Yeah.
And that's with everything that we do, though. You know, at the signal light, the light can just change. If somebody's bumping the horn for you to go through. So everybody's on automatic. So we need to, you know, step back a minute, take a deep breath, and be good listeners, brains. Mm-hmm. Because if you over talk and you sit there jaw jacking, you're going to miss a lot of information because there's somebody on the other side that has something to share. And a good strategic negotiator is a good listener because they're paying attention and just seeing where everybody colors in the white space, like putting together a beautiful mosaic. Take your time with it, you know? You don't have to rush to say yes or rush to say no. It's a process. Christine, real quick, before we conclude our valuable time with you, precious, tell us a little bit about the book and also the podcast.
Yes. So the book, Why Not Ask? A Conversation About Getting More, is available on Amazon. We're going to be dropping the audio book in March, on the Ides of March, 15th of March. And it talks about my story coming from literally being homeless and pregnant to getting my MBA from Harvard University, and takes all of that experience and all the work that I've done with all these different companies and lays out a blueprint for how to think about negotiation in a different way. I also have a podcast that we're in the middle of rebranding from In the Venn, Venn, V-E-N-N zone, which is plays off my company name, to what it's also going to be called, Why Not Ask. And yeah, we've interviewed, oh gosh, Jillian Michaels was on my show. Jillian actually wrote the foreword for the book. She's a dynamic woman. We're getting ready to drop an episode with Lee Steinberg, who's the real Jerry Maguire. We've just had some really amazing people on the show, and just really excited about it. Right now we're doing a lot of lives every week on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Twitch, on YouTube. So yeah.
Well, you're just all over the planet. Brains, take advantage of it. These are the movers and shakers. And also, pick up a book, okay? I am reading, I'm listening to it this time, for the third time, Think and Grow Rich. Mm. There is a nugget in that book every single time. And so you have to get your focus right. You know, they talk about mindset, but you got to focus. Get you some new glasses so that you can see things. And don't let them be rose-colored, because everything is not going to go your way. You got to be open. You got to open your mind. You got to look at diversity, equity, and inclusion, what other people bring to the table, their skill set, their ingenuity, their follow through, their commitment, their love and respect for you. All of that is valuable, brains. That is a part of the conversation. That is a part of the negotiation. And that's what we do here on the brain, on the brains, on the brains, on the edge, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Thank you so much, Christine McCray, for being here with me. You are really the business.
Thank you so much, April. What an honor to be here. And thank you for everyone for tuning in.
Absolutely. Bye, brains.